A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I had a busy day today out in the sun, getting our tool cabinet and patio well organized. As you know, my wife and I, Hannah, were moving in a couple of months and trying to learn from our past moving mistakes, which was not going through our stuff super carefully beforehand. I'm the last foray I've mentioned our home inventory system that I set up during our tenure in this apartment. And as much as sometimes I feel like it's a pain in the backside, it's essentially an open source app, self-hosted. You write down your storage units, you record your assets, and then you kind of put them inside. So today's project was going through all the power tools, all the hardware, and making sure it was properly marked and organized, and anything we didn't need was discarded. And it took me about probably 8 or 10 hours, but great feeling when you finally get through all of the boxes and you know that you're just down to the stuff you actually need. You know where it is, it's identifiable, etc. So that was today in my life. Not a bad way to spend got some good sunshine, etc. So Herman and Corin, this is going to be a tenuous connection, even by my standards, but something that I can recall, the last time Hannah and I traveled back from the US was one of these long-haul flights. They're kind of a blur at this point, or rather all airlines kind of end up feeling the same. So I'm not sure if it was Delta or El Al, but on these long-haul flights, it's a wide-body aircraft, so it's, I don't know, an 767 or 777, and you have this kind of galley set up in the back. And I can remember that they had this kind of snack area where you could just kind of go if you wanted an extra sandwich. I was just trying to stretch out my legs. But you know the way the cabin crew are generally kind of, I would say, slightly stressed out and kind of like get back to your seats and like whatever. But on this particular occasion, on this flight, they were just a bit more relaxed. Maybe people were asleep and they had some downtime. So I was basically trying to hassle the cabin crew to give me an extra glass of wine. We'll save the grievance for another day, but El Al got very, very reductive on their in-flight alcohol thing, and they kept pouring these glasses of wine that were literally it was like a shot of vodka. And I said, come on guys, you're killing me. So I went to the back and I said, okay, I'm gonna try to convince, you know, the powers who be on the steward team just to get like one of those little small bottles. And I struck up a conversation with the cabin crew. They were telling me about what they're planning to do on their trip to Israel. And as an organization fiend, even then, or in organization fiend in the making, I couldn't help but notice how insanely, meticulously well-organized the galley was. And I was thinking about what cabin crew do. Like, they're probably one of those professions that receive way less respect than they get. When you see them in action, you know, they're doing the meal service, the safety briefing. They actually don't have, they're doing a whole lot of responsible things. And I was looking around the galley, and I think they were pulling out a bottle of wine from one of these like metallic looking cabinets, and like it's like meticulously organized. And what I'd like to ask you, Herman and Corin, is when we think about people who excel in organizing confined spaces, and this is actually a classic confined space. If you think about the amount of room that a cabin crew have to work with, you've got a few hundred people stuffed into a big metal tube. Most of it's taken up with overhead bin storage. The cockpit's at the front, and they have this little area at the back in which they have to pull off an almost miraculous job of serving people anything that they, you know, the meals. They have to serve special meals if you're kosher, if you're halal. They have to, and if kosher meals are a whole nother thing, they have to adhere to strict rules regarding how the food is cooked in the same implement. They carry a really decent first aid kit, oxygen, but all of this is squished into this minuscule area, the size of literally kind of a bathroom. And I'd love to get, this might be one of the weirder questions I've asked, but I'd love to understand how these guys have got it down to an art, because they really have perfected it. Like, you don't have many incidents when you're flying and you ask for something, even on the kind of supplementary menu, and they say, oh, we're out of that. They're selling, of course, stuff from the in-flight menu as well on some flights. It's one of those things that hundreds of thousands of flights take place every day, pass without incidents, but it must require a huge amount of organization. I'd love to understand Herman and Korn, how this actually works, whether it's a short-haul flight selling a in-flight, selling watches or whatever, in-flight merchandising, or it's a long-haul flight and they're stocking all the meals, and they've also got to deal with the kind of first aid aspect. How do they actually manage to keep tabs on what's in stock in such a small space? I hope you don't think this is too weird of a question. It's just one of those curious things where I wonder, and I think these guys are probably people I could learn from. And in the end of this scintillating story, I got the extra bottle of wine, and I think I slept through landing. It was good wine, evidently. Herman and Korn, over to you.
Daniel sent us this one, and I'll admit, I had to read it twice to figure out if he was asking about airline logistics or just wanted us to validate his wine heist. Turns out, it's both. He spent the day organizing his tool cabinets and patio, which got him thinking about a long-haul flight where he talked his way into an extra bottle of wine from the cabin crew, and while he was back there, he noticed how insanely well-organized the galley was. His question is, how do flight attendants actually manage to keep track of everything in a space the size of a bathroom, serving hundreds of people, with meals, medical kits, oxygen, special dietary stuff, and sometimes duty-free merchandise, and almost never run out of anything? How does that system work?
Oh, this is one of those questions where the answer is way more interesting than anyone expects. The galley on a wide-body aircraft is basically a walk-in closet with a few hundred degrees of catering complexity crammed into it. And the reason they almost never run out is that the whole system is designed around something called PAR levels, a term from inventory management that the airline industry has refined to an almost absurd degree.
Sounds thrilling already!
It is, actually. A PAR level is the minimum quantity of an item you need on hand to meet demand until the next restock. In a restaurant, that might be, we need 12 salmon fillets for dinner service. On an aircraft, it's, we need exactly 47 chicken meals, 12 kosher, 8 halal, 6 vegetarian, and 4 gluten-free on this specific flight from Newark to Tel Aviv. And we know this because the booking system told us 3 days ago exactly who's sitting in every seat and what they ordered.
If someone changes their mind mid-flight?
They can't. Not on the special meals, anyway. Those are locked in at least 24 hours before departure. The major carriers use a catering logistics module integrated with the passenger service system. When you book a special meal, it doesn't just flag your seat. It generates a meal code that flows through to the catering facility, which then produces that exact meal, labels it with your seat number, and loads it onto the aircraft in a specific position in a specific cart.
Before the plane even leaves the gate, the galley isn't just stocked, it's mapped.
Every cart, every compartment, every drawer has a load plan. The cabin crew don't have to hunt for things. They have a diagram that says, cart 3, drawer 2, position 4, that's seat 27C's kosher meal. And it's the same diagram on every flight of that aircraft type, because standardization is the whole game.
That explains the meal side. But Daniel also mentioned the medical kit, the oxygen, the duty-free stuff. That's a lot of different inventory categories in an absurdly small footprint.
Right, and this is where it gets genuinely impressive. The galley isn't one inventory system, it's about 6 different ones, each with its own logic, all sharing the same physical space. You've got catering, which is perishable and flight-specific. You've got dry goods, snacks, beverages, those little bottles of wine Daniel was so determined to acquire. You've got duty-free, which is basically a mobile retail operation. You've got safety equipment, oxygen bottles, defibrillators, first aid kits, fire extinguishers. And you've got service items, blankets, headsets, amenity kits. Each has a completely different replenishment cycle.
The first aid kit alone is probably more complex than my entire apartment inventory.
It is, and it's regulated. The FAI and EASA both mandate exactly what has to be in an emergency medical kit. We're talking specific quantities of specific medications. Epinephrine, atropine, dextrose, lidocaine. The kit is sealed. If the seal is broken, the entire kit gets replaced at the next station, regardless of what was used. So the inventory tracking for that is binary, sealed or unsealed. That's a completely different model from how many Diet Cokes are left.
Sealed or unsealed? That's actually elegant. So the complexity is managed by giving different categories, different rules. The medical stuff is all or nothing. The meals are per seat. What about the wine Daniel was angling for?
This is where the airline industry has done something instructive for anyone trying to organize a home. They've separated predictable demand from variable demand and managed them differently. Predictable demand is meals. Everyone gets fed. Variable demand is the guy who wants a fourth mini bottle of wine at 2 a.m.
Daniel, in other words?
And the way they handle variable demand is through buffer stock calculated on historical consumption patterns by route. Airlines know, down to the bottle, how much alcohol passengers consume on a Newark to Tel Aviv flight versus a Chicago to London flight. They adjust the catering loads accordingly. A flight to Tel Aviv might stock more kosher meals, but also, interestingly, different beverage ratios. Long-haul flights to certain destinations have markedly different consumption patterns, not just in what people drink, but when they drink it.
The galley isn't just stocked. It's stocked with a predictive model of human behavior on a specific route at a specific time of day. That's slightly unnerving and extremely impressive.
It goes further. The carts themselves are designed to be inventoried in about 90 seconds. Flight attendants do a count at the beginning of the flight, and they do a count at the end. The difference is consumption. That data gets fed back into the system, and the next flight's PAR levels get adjusted. It's a continuous feedback loop.
It's not just that they're organized. They're organized around a learning system.
And this is the thing I think Daniel was actually picking up on, even if he didn't name it directly. What he saw in that galley wasn't just tidiness. It was a system that had been iterated over millions of flights. Every time a flight attendant said, "We're out of the chicken," that data point went somewhere and someone adjusted a number in a spreadsheet, and the next flight had more chicken.
Which brings us back to his tool cabinets. He spent 8 to 10 hours organizing his power tools and hardware, marking everything, discarding what he didn't need. That's the physical labor. But the system he's using, this open source inventory app, that's the feedback loop. The difference is, his loop is manual. He has to decide to update it. The airline's loop is automatic. The consumption creates the data, and the data creates the restock.
Right. And that's the gap between a home inventory system and an industrial one. The home system depends on the human to be the sensor. Did I use 3 screws or 4? Did I put the drill back in the right drawer? The airline system removes as much human judgment as possible. The cart has exactly the right number of meals. If one is missing, someone notices because the count doesn't match the manifest. The system is designed to make discrepancies visible immediately.
That's the principle, isn't it? Make the problem visible. Daniel mentioned that in his last move. The mistake was not going through everything carefully beforehand. They moved stuff they didn't need. The error wasn't visible until they were unpacking at the other end.
The airline galley is the opposite of that. Nothing gets on the aircraft that isn't on the manifest. Every item in that galley was put there deliberately, in a specific location, for a specific purpose, and its presence was verified before the door closed. The reason the cabin crew can find things instantly isn't that they're exceptionally talented at spatial reasoning. It's that the system eliminates search entirely.
That's a phrase worth pausing on. Most of what we call organizing is actually just making search slightly less painful. We put things in labeled boxes so that when we need them, we can find them in 5 minutes instead of 20. The galley doesn't do search. It does retrieval. You don't look for the kosher meal. You go to the position where the kosher meal is always stored, and it's there.
This is where the physical design of the galley becomes relevant. Those metallic cabinets Daniel noticed, those are probably Atlas or Mapco units depending on the carrier. They're modular storage systems with standardized insert dimensions. Every tray, every container, every bottle slot is sized to a specific unit. There's no, "I'll just shove this in here." The container either fits or it doesn't. The physical constraints enforce the organizational system.
The system isn't just procedural, it's architectural. The cabinets themselves won't let you be disorganized.
and this is a principle that applies to home organization too. When you're organizing a workshop, the best thing you can do is make the storage enforce the categories. If you have a drawer for M6 bolts, the drawer insert should have exactly the right size compartments. If something doesn't fit, you know it's in the wrong place. The physical environment does the work of keeping the system honest.
Daniel's using an open source inventory app, which is the digital side, but I'm guessing his tool cabinets don't have standardized inserts designed around his specific inventory.
And that's the gap. The airline galley is a fully integrated system where the physical storage, the digital manifest, and the procedural workflow all reinforce each other. The cabin crew's training isn't just here's where things go. It's here's the procedure for verifying that everything is where it goes, and here's the procedure for what to do if it isn't.
Let's talk about the training for a second, because Daniel mentioned something interesting. He said cabin crew don't get enough respect, and that when you watch them work, they're doing a lot of responsible things simultaneously. The organization system isn't just about stuff, it's about cognitive load.
This is a point that doesn't get made enough. Cabin crew on a long-haul flight are managing safety, service, and security simultaneously. The galley organization exists to reduce the cognitive overhead of the service part so they can stay focused on the safety part. If a flight attendant has to think about where the defibrillator is during a medical emergency, the system has failed. The defibrillator location is known. It's checked before every flight. It's in the same place on every aircraft of that type. That's not convenience. That's regulatory.
The organization isn't just about efficiency. It's about resilience under pressure. When something goes wrong, the system has to hold up.
This is where home organization systems often fail. They work fine when you're calm and have time. But when you're in a hurry, or stressed, or it's late and you're tired, the system breaks down. You put the thing in the wrong place because it's easier, and then the system is corrupted, and 6 months later you can't find anything. The airline galley is designed for the worst-case scenario, a medical emergency at 3 a.m. over the Atlantic with turbulence. The system has to work then.
That's a much higher bar than I can find my screwdrivers on a Saturday afternoon.
And they meet that bar through defined states. There's the pre-flight state, where everything is verified against the manifest. There's the in-flight state, where items are consumed and waste is managed. And there's the post-flight state, where remaining inventory is counted and discrepancies are logged. The transitions between states are governed by checklists.
The least glamorous and most effective tool in human history.
I will defend checklists until my dying breath. Atul Gawande wrote an entire book about this, The Checklist Manifesto. And the core insight is that in complex systems, human memory is not reliable enough. You need external scaffolding. The airline galley is a physical instantiation of that principle. The checklist says, verify the emergency equipment. The emergency equipment is in a labeled compartment. The compartment is sealed. You check the seal. No memory required.
We've got PAR levels, predictive modeling by route, modular physical storage, integration with the booking system, checklist govern state transitions, and a feedback loop that adjusts future loads based on actual consumption. That's the system.
What breaks is the interface between the system and reality. The most common failure mode is catering errors. The meals get loaded onto the wrong cart, or the cart gets loaded onto the wrong aircraft, or the special meals don't match the manifest. The cabin crew are supposed to catch this during the pre-flight check, but if they're rushed, and they often are because turnaround times are tight, errors slip through.
Then someone in 27C doesn't get the kosher meal, and the flight attendant has to improvise.
And improvisation is the enemy of the system. The system is designed to eliminate improvisation. But when the system fails, the human has to step in, and that's where the skill of the cabin crew becomes visible. The good ones can improvise without destroying the system for the rest of the flight. They'll find a solution for 27C without emptying 3 carts and messing up the organization for everyone else.
There's a phrase for that, isn't there? The system fails in a way that's manageable, not catastrophic.
And the airline galley is designed for graceful degradation. Even if one cart is completely misloaded, the other carts are still correct. The system is modular, so failures are contained. You don't lose the whole galley because one catering facility made a mistake.
That's actually a really useful principle for home organization, too. Don't design a system where one mistake corrupts everything. If you put one screwdriver in the wrong drawer, the whole workshop shouldn't descend into chaos.
That's why the airline model of everything has one place and only one place is so powerful. If the screwdriver isn't in its place, you know something went wrong. The error is visible. In a less organized system, the screwdriver could be in any of six drawers, and you'd never know if it was missing or just misplaced.
Daniel mentioned something else I want to circle back to. He said that on this particular flight, the crew was more relaxed. People were asleep, they had some downtime. And in that moment, the galley became a social space. He was back there chatting, angling for wine. The organization system created slack, and the slack created room for human connection.
The point of the system isn't the system. The point of the system is what it enables. When the cabin crew aren't spending cognitive energy on finding things or fixing errors, they have bandwidth for everything else, including being human with passengers who wander back to stretch their legs.
That's probably what Daniel was actually responding to. He saw a space that was intensely organized, but it didn't feel oppressive. It felt competent. The crew wasn't stressed about the organization because the organization was handling itself. They could be relaxed because the system was doing the work.
That's the dream, isn't it? An organizational system that's so good you don't have to think about it, you just trust it.
That brings us back to his move. He's got a home inventory system. He spent 8 to 10 hours going through everything. He's discarding what he doesn't need, marking what he's keeping, making sure everything is identifiable. He's doing the pre-flight check.
And the question is whether the system will hold up through the move itself. Moving is the in-flight turbulence. It's the stress test. The boxes get shuffled, the labels get torn, the movers put things in the wrong room. The system has to survive that.
What would the airline galley approach to moving look like?
It would look like what roadies and diplomats do, actually. There's a whole body of practice around high-stakes relocation where the inventory has to survive chaos. The key principles are label by destination, not by content. Don't write kitchen stuff. Write kitchen, cabinet 3, shelf 2. The label tells the mover exactly where to put the box, not what's in it.
Because the mover doesn't care what's in it. The mover cares where it goes.
And the second principle is, the manifest travels separately from the boxes. You don't put the only copy of the inventory inside a box that might get lost. You keep a digital manifest and you update it as boxes get loaded and unloaded. The airline equivalent is the load plan. It's not inside the cargo hold. It's with the crew and the ground staff.
The third principle.
Verify it every handoff. When the movers load the truck, you check off the boxes. When they unload, you check them off again. When the box goes into the new house, you verify it's in the right room. Every transition is a checkpoint. That's the sterile cockpit concept applied to moving.
Daniel's home inventory app is the digital manifest. He's done the pre-move purge. The question is whether he'll maintain the checkpoints during the move itself, or whether the chaos of moving day will overwhelm the system.
That's where the airline model has an advantage. He doesn't. The system is enforced by multiple people. The catering facility, the ground crew, the cabin crew, everyone has a checklist, and everyone's checklist intersects with everyone else's. If the caterer makes an error, the cabin crew's checklist catches it. There's redundancy built into the process.
Daniel's moving with Hannah. That's two people.
Also, less complexity. You don't need a multi-layered verification system for a two-bedroom apartment move. You need one good checklist and the discipline to follow it even when you're exhausted and the truck is double parked and it's starting to rain.
Which is, of course, exactly when most people abandon the checklist.
And that's the difference between a system that works in theory and a system that works in practice. The airline system works in practice because it's mandatory. The checklist isn't optional. It's part of the job. If you skip it and something goes wrong, you're accountable. Home organization doesn't have that enforcement mechanism. It's purely voluntary. So the system has to be designed for the human, not the human for the system.
That's the paradox of home organization, isn't it? The more elaborate the system, the more discipline it requires, and the more likely it is to fail when you're tired or stressed or just don't feel like it. The airline galley works because it's someone's job to make it work. At home, it's nobody's job.
Which is why the best home organization systems are the simplest ones. One place for each thing. A habit of putting things back. That's it. Everything beyond that is optimization that probably isn't worth the maintenance cost.
Unless you're the kind of person who enjoys the maintenance, which Daniel might be. He spent 8 to 10 hours organizing tools and hardware. That's not a chore for him. That's a Saturday well spent.
There's a personality type that finds inventory management satisfying. The airline industry is full of those people. It's a profession that selects for conscientiousness and process orientation. The cabin crew who thrive are the ones who actually like knowing that everything is in its place.
The ones who don't thrive probably don't last long in a job where the galley has to be perfect to every single flight.
The system filters for the people who can maintain it. At home, there's no filter. You have to design a system that works for whoever you actually are, not whoever you wish you were.
What's the takeaway for someone who's not a natural organizer, but wants to move without chaos?
Steal the airline's principle of make the error visible. Don't rely on memory. If a box is supposed to go to the kitchen, put a bright red label on it that says kitchen in letters you can read from across the room. If a box contains fragile items, mark it on every side, not just the top. The system should shout at you when something's wrong.
The second takeaway?
Separate the permanent from the consumable. The airline galley treats meals completely differently from safety equipment. The meals get consumed and replenished. The defibrillator stays forever and gets inspected. At home, your power tools are the safety equipment. Your screws and sandpaper are the meals. Don't organize them the same way.
That's actually really useful. I've been organizing my leaf medicine supplies all wrong.
Your leaf medicine supplies are a whole separate category that I'm not going to touch.
But the principle stands. The stuff you use up needs a different system from the stuff you keep forever. The airline figured this out decades ago, and we're still putting everything in the same drawer at home.
The airline figured it out because they had to. When you're serving 400 meals at 35,000 feet with no ability to run to the store, the cost of disorganization is immediate and visible. You have a passenger who doesn't get fed. At home, the cost of disorganization is delayed. You can't find the screwdriver, so you buy another one, and now you have three screwdrivers in three different drawers, and none of them are where you expect.
The cost is invisible until you move. Then suddenly, every forgotten purchase, every misplaced tool, every "I'll sort this later" box becomes extremely visible and extremely heavy.
Moving is the ultimate inventory audit. There's no hiding from it. Every item you own has to be touched, decided about, and transported. The airline galley goes through a mini audit every single flight. That's why it stays organized. At home, we go years between audits, and the entropy accumulates.
Daniel's pre-move purge is essentially compressing years of audits into one very long Saturday. And he's using his inventory app as the audit tool.
And the question is whether he'll maintain that rhythm after the move, or whether the system will go dormant until the next move. The airline doesn't have the option of going dormant. The audit happens every flight, whether anyone feels like it or not.
That's the discipline gap. The airline has institutional discipline. The home has personal discipline. And personal discipline is a finite resource.
Which is why the physical environment matters so much. If the storage makes the right thing easy and the wrong thing hard, you need less discipline. The airline galley's modular inserts are the physical manifestation of that. You literally cannot put the meal tray in the wrong slot because it won't fit.
I'm now imagining a home workshop where every tool has a custom-cut foam insert, and if you try to put the wrong tool in the wrong slot, it just doesn't go.
It's called tool shadowing, and it's standard practice in aviation maintenance. Every tool in an aircraft maintenance hangar has a specific cutout in a foam drawer liner. At the end of a shift, you glance at the drawer and instantly see if anything is missing. It's the same principle as the galley. Make the error visible.
It also prevents the worst-case scenario, which in aviation maintenance is leaving a tool inside an engine. The shadow board makes it impossible to miss.
The cost of disorganization in aviation isn't, "I can't find my screwdriver." It's "the screwdriver is inside the turbine." The stakes are higher, so the systems are more robust, but the principles scale down. A shadow board for your kitchen drawers would tell you instantly if a spatula is missing. You probably don't need that level of organization for spatulas, but you might want it for the things you actually care about.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question about confined spaces. The airline galley is a confined space with extremely high stakes and no room for error. The principles that emerged from that environment: modular storage, checklist-governed processes, error visibility, consumption tracking, feedback loops. Those are applicable anywhere. But they're especially applicable when space is tight and the cost of failure is high.
I think there's one more principle that we haven't named explicitly. The galley is organized around workflow, not categories. The meals aren't stored by type. All the chicken together, all the pasta together. They're stored by seat assignment and service sequence. The first cart out is the one that serves rows 1 through 10. Everything in that cart is for those rows. The organization follows the work.
That's a big shift from how most people organize at home. We group by category. All the screwdrivers together, all the wrenches together. But if you're doing a specific project that needs one screwdriver, one wrench, and one hammer, you're visiting three different drawers. The airline model would put the project's tools together.
That's actually what a well-organized tool bag does. An electrician's tool bag isn't organized by tool type, it's organized by task. The tools they need for a specific job are in a specific pouch. The galley is just a very large, very complex tool bag for the task of serving 400 meals in sequence.
If Daniel wanted to apply this to his workshop, he might organize by project rather than by tool type. The hanging shelves project gets a bin with the drill, the screws, the brackets, and the level. The tools might be duplicated across bins, but the workflow is faster.
The trade-off is space efficiency. The airline can't afford duplication because space is the scarcest resource, so they optimize for space first, workflow second. At home, you might have more space than the airline galley, so you can afford some duplication if it makes the workflow smoother.
It's always a trade-off. Space versus time. The airline optimizes for space because the aircraft is a tube, and every cubic inch costs fuel. The home workshop optimizes for, well, it depends on what you value more. If you have plenty of space, duplicate the screwdriver and organize by project. If you're in a Jerusalem apartment, maybe you organize like the airline.
Jerusalem apartments are famously not spacious.
They are not. Daniel's move is probably from one compact apartment to another, so the airline model is relevant. Not just as a curiosity, but as a practical template for organizing a small space with a lot of stuff.
The one thing the airline model can't solve is the emotional attachment to stuff. The galley doesn't have sentimentality. Nobody keeps the extra meal tray because it reminds them of a nice flight they took in 2019. The system is ruthlessly rational. At home, we keep things for reasons that have nothing to do with utility.
That's where the pre-move purge becomes emotionally difficult. Daniel spent 8 to 10 hours going through power tools and hardware. That's relatively straightforward. Tools are either useful or they're not. But wait until he gets to the box of old cables and chargers, or the kitchen gadgets, or the books.
The books are the hardest. Nobody ever wants to get rid of books.
I have leaves I've been saving for years. They're completely dried out and useless for leaf medicine, but I can't bring myself to throw them away.
You don't practice leaf medicine.
That's not the point.
The point is that organizational systems are always, at some level, a negotiation with our own psychology. The airline galley doesn't have psychology. It has procedure. At home, we have to design systems that work with our psychology, not against it. If you're the kind of person who keeps things for sentimental reasons, your system needs to accommodate that. Maybe you have a sentimental box that's explicitly labeled as such, and you let yourself keep whatever fits in the box. That's a container-based constraint. Another airline principle, actually.
The container is the limit. If it doesn't fit, you have to choose.
The galley has a fixed number of carts. If a new item needs to go in, something else has to come out. There's no, I'll just add another shelf. The physical constraint forces the decision.
That's actually liberating. Constraints make decisions easier. If you have infinite storage, you never have to decide what to keep, and the clutter accumulates forever. A fixed container says, this is the boundary. Stay within it.
Daniel's inventory app is a digital container. It can hold an infinite number of entries, but the physical apartment is a fixed container. The move is forcing the reconciliation between the two.
Which is exactly what the airline does every flight. The manifest says what should be on board. The physical galley contains what's actually on board. The pre-flight check reconciles them. Daniel's move is his pre-flight check.
If he does it right, when he arrives at the new apartment, everything will be where it's supposed to be, and he won't have to spend 6 months searching for the box with the kitchen utensils.
Oh, the wine.
The wine is a separate inventory category with its own par levels and consumption tracking.
Daniel's personal par level for wine appears to be more than the airline wants to give me.
To be fair, he did say they were pouring shots. That's not a wine service, that's a wine suggestion.
A wine insinuation?
A wine hypothesis.
He tested that hypothesis by going to the galley and charming the crew out of a full bottle, which, by the way, is a data point that the airline's predictive model probably didn't account for. One passenger will negotiate directly with the cabin crew for supplementary alcohol.
The model probably has a category for that. They just call it shrinkage.
So to wrap this around to Daniel's actual question, how do cabin crews manage to keep track of everything in a space the size of a bathroom? The answer is that they don't. The system does. The system is a multi-layered integration of predictive demand modeling, modular physical storage, checklist-governed workflows, consumption tracking, and feedback loops that adjust future loads. The cabin crew are the human interface, but the heavy lifting is done by the process design.
The reason it looks effortless is that it's been iterated over millions of flights. Every edge case has been encountered and solved. Every failure mode has been analyzed and mitigated. The galley you see on a long-haul flight is the accumulated wisdom of decades of aviation logistics, compressed into a few square meters of stainless steel and labeled drawers.
It's the organizational equivalent of an old-growth forest, layers upon layers of adaptation, all fitting together into something that looks natural, but is actually the product of relentless optimization.
That's a very Korn way of putting it.
I'm a sloth. I appreciate slow accumulated wisdom.
You also appreciate napping, which is what Daniel did after he got his wine.
He earned that nap. 8 to 10 hours of tool organization followed by a successful wine negotiation? That's a full day. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In medieval Bruges, the Guild of Bellmakers required new members to stand inside a freshly cast bell while it was struck 12 times, a ritual believed to test both courage and whether the bell was properly tuned. Approximately 1 in 7 initiates suffered permanent hearing damage.
Right. 1 in 7. That's a surprisingly specific statistic for a medieval bell ritual.
I have so many questions, and I'm choosing to ask none of them.
To close this out, Daniel's moving in a couple of months, and he's doing the work now. The purging, the inventory, the labeling. The airline galley teaches us that the secret to a smooth move isn't just organizing your stuff. It's designing a system that survives the chaos of moving day, checklists, labels by destination, verification at every handoff, and making errors visible. The system does the work so you don't have to.
If you do it right, you arrive at the new place with everything accounted for, nothing lost, and enough bandwidth left over to open a bottle of wine that you didn't have to negotiate for.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you enjoyed this, leave us a review. It helps other people discover the show.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.